Polity Horizon, the podcast from QPolity. Now, the past couple of months, we have seen the lira crashing, Turkey's economy struggling, and Erdogan, his credibility is now being questioned. We have QPolity founder Adnan Khan to make sense of it all. Now, how are we keeping, Adnan?
I'm good, Yusuf. I'm good. How are you?
Yeah, I'm very well, thank you. Now, Erdogan for a long time was considered a capable hand with the economy. The term Erdoganomics was even coined after him. But now it seems like the shine is wearing off. What do you make of this?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely, Yusuf. What you find is Erdogan's credibility has really rested on Turkey's economic performance. And I think we need to keep in mind, when Erdogan came to power back in 2002, the Turkish GDP was about 250 billion. A couple of years ago, the Turkish GDP got up to about 900, 950 billion. There was talk of it even reaching a $1 trillion economy. It's now fallen back, obviously, due to COVID to about 750 billion. But nevertheless, the economy of Turkey has significantly grown under Erdogan. And Erdogan takes credibility for this. And this is what's allowed Erdogan to project Turkey to get involved in regional issues and beyond. Now, ever since Erdogan rose to power back in 2002, he aligned himself with the business elite. Very quickly, he traveled to China, Brazil, India, Russia, and the African continent in order to make deals with these countries and to push Turkish businesses to really make money and establish commercial links with these countries. Most of the public sector in Turkey was gradually privatized, which, you know, previous military regimes kept a tight grip on. Public infrastructure investments were made possible without burdening the treasury. They were made through the build, manage, transfer, privatization method. Erdogan, you find also, he abolished visa requirements with more than 70 countries. And these were measures that contributed to the creation of a free trade market with these nations. All of this really culminated in 2013. With Erdogan celebrating the repayment of their last installment to the IMF. And that was after a 52-year relationship. And Turkey became part of a very unique club of countries who paid off all the IMF loans and no longer needed IMF money. And the following year, 2014, Turkey became part of what was called the Mint Nation, another acronym alongside the BRIC nations. So these were the next economic giants that Goldman Sachs considered. So Mint standing for Mexico, Indonesia, Nigeria and Turkey. However, if you look at Turkey's performance under Erdogan closely, unlike countries like China, which focus their economy on manufacturing and exporting these goods to the global market, or Russia, which produces lots of energy and related commodities and exports them, Turkey's boom was largely based on domestic consumption. So while Turkey's export capability did grow, notably in areas such as washing machines and electrical appliances, its growth rested largely on consumption and a thriving construction sector. And that's why you've seen a lot of construction really over the last decade or so in Istanbul. In fact, much of Turkey's economic expansion of the last two decades has been a result of a building explosion, which is financed by easy credit that was coming into Turkey. In fact, the wave of foreign direct investment from Germany, France and Holland into Turkey gave rise to Turkey's economic success. And as I mentioned, Turkey's GDP grew from 250 billion to 750 billion today. However, because a lot of this is based on debt, that is a problem Turkey faces today. In fact, the cost of having Erdogan in power for the Turkish people is a debt problem that they have now. And these debt problems are now causing issues across the economy. And one of them is the decline in the Turkish lira.
Now, you mentioned debt problems. Why is debt such a big problem? Because a lot of the world's G20 nations have got a lot more debt that goes up into the trillions. Why is it such a big issue for Turkey?
So Turkey's problem when it comes to debt really is because most of its debt is not from domestic sources, it's actually from foreign sources. So external debt is money that is borrowed from abroad in a foreign currency. It's not money borrowed from your local banks in your own currency. So the Turkey's currency is the lira. So when it borrows in the dollar or the euro. And this is when you say the debt is denominated in a foreign currency. Now, external debt, it comes with challenges that debt denominated in your domestic currency does not. And just to give you an example, so if Turkey borrows 100 million at a 10% rate in US dollar denominated debt, it would owe 10 million a year. So 10% of 100 million is 10 million, and that would be how much it's got to repay a year. Now, if the Turkish exchange rate with the dollar was 2-1, then Turkey would owe 20 million liras a year. It would take 20 million liras to pay $10 million. Now, if the lira fell and the exchange rate became 4-1, then Turkey would still owe $10 million, but that would be the equivalent of 40 million liras per year. In effect, the cost of debt service would double simply because the exchange rate fluctuates. And that's really the problem you have here. When your debt is denominated in a foreign currency, the debt doesn't remain the same. You will have to spend more and more of your own currency to get the foreign currency to repay the debt. So yeah, in dollar amounts, Turkey's debt has remained the same. But because the exchange rate changes, Turkey is having to spend more and more lira to repay the original debt. And Turkey's debt currently is 52% of the economy, $450 billion. That's a lot of money. And if Turkey is having to repay that debt, then that money is not being spent in the Turkish economy, it's going out of the economy. And that's the problem Turkey faces at the moment. So yes, every country has a bit of debt. And if the debt is serviceable, it's not a problem. Because the debt is in a foreign currency, it now means Turkey is always affected by foreign currency movements. And that's the problem Turkey faces. And that's the challenge of having debt fundamentally, and then debt especially in a foreign currency.
Now, I guess the obvious question is, why didn't Turkey just borrow from its own banks in the lira? Why did it turn to foreign banks and foreign currency?
So that's a very good question. The reason why is because Turkey has one of the lowest national savings rates in the world. So what you find is literally the amount of money that's needed by the private sector to spend, which they're going to get from borrowing from their banks, and the amount of money the government needs, that physical amount of money isn't available in Turkey because the Turkish public have a very, very low national saving rate. Are they going to try to change this? So really from the 2000 onwards, he's tried to change this by having a very high interest rate. So people save, they're going to get a higher rate of interest. So in Turkey's history, they've had interest rates of 20-25%, very, very high rates. The problem with that is with such high rates, it's attracted a lot of foreign hot money to come into Turkey to benefit from those high interest rates. So if you think of it like this, I put my money in Turkey because the interest rate is 20%. But at some point, I'm going to take that money out. Now, as I put money in and as I take money out, that affects the exchange rate. So if the interest rates start to fall in Turkey, I'll pull my money out. If I pull my money out, the Turkish currency will potentially collapse if it's done in large numbers. And that's the problem really Turkey faces, that Turkey, because of its high interest rate, to attract its domestic public to save, because they had a low saving rate, it attracted a lot of short-term speculative money. And when that money leaves the country, which happens regularly, what you find is the Turkish currency collapses. And this isn't something new. This has happened in previous regimes, even previous military regimes as well. Now, interestingly, Turkey's domestic population is not allowed to borrow debt denominated in a foreign currency. Instead, banks are responsible to borrow the debt and then lend it out in the Turkish currency in the domestic market. So really, a lot of the debt Turkey has, it's in the hands of the private sector rather than the actual government. But because this debt can only be renewed by exchanging it with dollars, it affects the exchange rate as well. And the exchange rate affects everyone. Turkey imports $50 billion worth of energy every year. So if the exchange rate changes, the cost of that changes. Turkey imports, has a high import bill as well. So the cost of those goods change when the exchange rate changes. So can you see all the combination of all these factors cause massive economic problems for Turkey? And now the chickens have come home to roost. You know, for years, Erdogan would blame others. He'd blame a foreign conspiracy. He'd blame shadowy figures who were trying to bring him down. When really the economic model he's pursued, I mean, this is what we should call Erdoganomics, which isn't really an economic model. I mean, borrowing your way to growing your economy is never a sustainable effort. And that's what Erdogan's economic model really is.
Now, what does all this mean for Turkey's foreign policy?
Well, this will have a major impact. Erdogan's credibility, as you can see, is really built on a pack of cards. And those pack of cards mainly are the economy. He's taken the economy from being a subdued economy with very little dynamism. And he's always projected himself as he's fixed it. He's made Turkey richer with all these infrastructure projects. And he used that really as a basis to engage in the Balkans, in the Middle East, in North Africa. He presented himself as an ideal Islamic type of ruler as well, who knows how to run the economy. This is all going to have an impact on that. Why should anybody take you seriously when you've got so many problems at home? In fact, it even looks as though Erdogan has extended his hand too far. He's overextended. So, you know, some countries may call his bluff. He's punching above his weight. That's the impact it can have on a foreign policy.
And what does the debt situation mean for AKP's electoral prospects in the elections in 2023?
So it doesn't look good. For the first time or in my lifetime, the AKP is not guaranteed victory in the election. Up until now, for two decades, every election, the AKP was well ahead. But the economic performance now and these debt problems, it's really having a major impact on people's lives. Bread makers can't afford to make bread. People don't have enough money to buy bread because prices are going through the roof. People can't afford it. Inflation has always been a problem in Turkey. Going forward, and the AKP is trying to blame other people, but it can't. People have seen through it. So really, this is going to have a major impact on Erdogan and the AKP's electoral prospects for 2023. It means they're not guaranteed victory. So you're already seeing the Erdogan's making moves. So at the moment, Turkey has one of the highest electoral percentage limits to join parliament. You need to win at least 10% of the electoral vote to be allowed to take your seats in parliament. And at the moment, Erdogan's in a coalition with the Nationalist Party. So there's talk of lowering it down to 7% so the Nationalist Party gets through in the next election. I think Erdogan will do what he's always done. He will resort to nationalism, nativism. He will probably turn against the Kurds, and it will probably become quite a fraught electoral campaign. He will literally probably present it as, I'm the savior of Turkey, without me the country's going to pot. And you can already see signs of that already, and I think it's probably going to get worse as you see that Turkey, Erdogan and AKP's electoral prospects don't look good.
Thank you for your time today, Adnan. To learn more about this issue or any other issues, you can visit our website, www.geopolity.com. Thank you for listening.